Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter. Technology has come a long way in helping women to get pregnant. Adults who were once unable to have children are now able to have them. However, many countries have passed laws limiting use of this technology. China is one of them. Many in China are debating the wisdom in banning single women from freezing their own eggs. Ana Mateo brings us this story on women's reproductive rights.
Modern science has done a lot to help adults who were once unable to produce children. But a fertility research group notes that many countries have passed laws to limit use of that technology. The group, the International Federation of Fertility Societies, has ties to the World Health Organization. It reported that in 2013, most Southeast Asian nations and many Islamic countries bar unmarried women from using the new technology to have children. The People's Republic of China is among those governments that have banned single women from freezing their eggs for future use. This ban has led to a public debate in China. Those objecting the loudest are women who want reproductive rights. They want the right to decide on their own methods of family planning. This debate heated up when a Chinese actress, Xu Jinglei, reported that she had gone to the United States 2 years ago to have 9 of her eggs frozen. Xu Jinglei is 41 years old. She said her eggs were frozen so that she could possibly have her own children in the future. In her words, to save herself an option. After news of her U.S. visit spread, China's state media reported comments of Chinese health and family planning officials. The Health Commission's rule took effect in 2003. It denies this treatment to single women and couples who are not in line with the nation's population and family planning regulation. Some Chinese have come out against the ban. The writer and race car driver Han Han expressed his protest on Weibo, a popular social media site. He asked why a woman can't have a baby without being married. Can't she use her own eggs? He asked. His reaction was widely shared by others on social media. Some people said the ban is a sign of gender inequality, since men in China are allowed to donate sperm. Already, the ban has created problems for a Los Angeles reproductive clinic. The center had planned to advertise its egg freezing treatment on Alibaba's group buying website, Juhuasuan. Last month, the same website successfully connected 7 sperm banks in China to more than 22,000 men who offered to serve as sperm donors. However, the site is taking a more careful policy toward women's egg freezing programs. Melanie Lee of Alibaba Group said, "A Los Angeles clinic approached us, and yes, we had initial discussions, but nothing came out of those discussions." She adds, "I think we have to look at the regulations that are currently in place to see what the regulations will allow."
Thanks, Anna. You are listening to As It Is, And now we will take a short break. When we come back, we hear from people who believe that a woman freezing her eggs is not only a good insurance policy, but a good way to increase China's falling birth rate. Welcome back to As It Is. On today's program, we are talking about reproductive rights for women in China. The country has relaxed its one-child policy, but it is restricting single women from freezing their own eggs for future use. Many in China are criticizing the ban on single women freezing their eggs. They say it is practical, meaning it is an answer to a real problem. Others feel letting single women freeze their eggs will help China's falling birth rate. Anna Mateo continues this story.
A 26-year-old woman, who gave her name as C.C. Chen, is from Shanxi Province. Ms. Chen says she would freeze her eggs if she had enough money for the treatment. She says it is a realistic and practical thing to do. Women these days face increased pressures from society and work. They may suffer a greater chance of infertility when they get old. So if we can freeze our eggs at a younger age, it will be very practical and a precautionary measure, she says. Yaya Chen is a sociologist with the Shanghai Academy of Social Sciences. She agrees that freezing eggs is like a reproductive insurance policy for both single and married women. She adds that China should use the reproductive treatment and others to help deal with a falling birth rate and aging population. She says, I think restrictions should be fully relaxed to give single women rights to give birth either via assisted reproduction or by natural birth. Governments can provide some guidance, but each woman should have absolute reproductive rights. In late 2013, the Chinese government began to ease its one-child policy. Now, Chinese couples are legally permitted to have two children when at least one parent is an only child. But that has so far failed to increase the birth rate. At the same time, other people wishing to have babies will face punishment, and their children will be barred of Chinese citizenship. There are other reasons why Chinese health officials argue against the egg freezing procedure. One reason is the survival rate of the eggs. Some officials say that less than 50% of the eggs survive the process. Also, the cost of freezing eggs can be high. The Health Commission told VOA that the egg freezing procedure falls in the category of the assisted reproductive treatment and is currently under a clinical study phase, whose development the Commission will closely follow to ensure its safety and effectiveness. In other parts of the world, doctors are less concerned about the survival rate of frozen eggs. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. And don't forget to check our website for more stories from VOA Learning English.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Hello, I'm Ana Mateo with the Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. In the 1930s, a song, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, was very popular in the United States. It was the time of the Big Depression. The song had meaning for many people who had lost their jobs.
Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick.
A dime is a piece of money whose value is 1/10 of a dollar. Today, a dime does not buy very much. But it was different in the 1930s. During that time, a dime sometimes meant the difference between eating and starving. The American economy today is much better, yet many workers are concerned about losing their jobs as companies reorganize. Americans have special ways of talking about economic troubles. People in business or families may say they feel the pinch, or they may say they are up against it. Or if things are really bad, they may say they have to throw in the towel. A pinch is painful pressure. To feel the pinch is to suffer painful pressure involving money. The expression feel the pinch has been used since the 16th century. The famous English writer William Shakespeare wrote something very close to this in his great play, King Lear. King Lear says he would accept necessity's sharp pinch. He means he would have to do without many of the things he always had. Much later, the Times of London newspaper used the expression about bad economic times during the 1860s. It said, so much money having been spent, all classes felt the pinch. Worse than feeling the pinch is being up against it. The saying means to be in a lot of trouble. Word expert James Rogers says the word it in the saying can mean any and all difficulties. He says the saying became popular in the United States and Canada in the late 19th century. Writer George Ade used it in a book called Artie. He wrote, I saw I was up against it. Sometimes a business that is up against it will have to throw in the towel. This means to accept defeat or surrender. Throwing in the towel may mean that a company will have to declare bankruptcy. The company will have to take legal steps to let people know it has no money to pay its debts. Another word expert, Charles Funk, says an 1874 publication called The Slang Dictionary explains throwing in the towel. It says the words probably came from the sport of boxing, or prize fighting. The book says the saying began because a competitor's face was cleaned with a cloth towel or other material. When a boxer's towel was thrown, it meant he was admitting defeat. Most businesses do not throw in the towel. They just reorganize so they can compete better. This Words and Their Stories was written by Jerry Watson, and I'm Ana Mateo. Check out our website for more episodes of Words and Their Stories.
in America, a program in special English on The Voice of America. Today, Steve Ember and Rich Kleinfeld tell about scientist Rachel Carson. Her work started the environmental protection movement in the United States.
Rachel Carson was born on May 27, 1907, in Springdale, Pennsylvania. Rachel's father, Robert Carson, was a salesman who invested in local land. He purchased 26 hectares of land to make a home for his family. The area was surrounded by fields, trees, and streams. The Carson family enjoyed living in the beautiful country environment. Rachel's mother, Maria Carson, had been a school teacher. She loved books. She also loved nature. Rachel was the youngest of three children. Her sister and brother were already in school when she was born. So Mrs. Carson was able to spend a lot of time with Rachel. She showed Rachel the beauty of nature. She also taught Rachel a deep love for books. Mrs. Carson became the most important influence on Rachel's life.
Rachel was a quiet child. She liked to read and to write poems and stories. She was very intelligent. At a very early age, she decided she wanted to be a writer someday. Her first published story appeared in a children's magazine when she was 10 years old. Rachel went to the Pennsylvania College for Women. She studied English because she wanted to become a professional writer. Yet, she felt she did not have the imagination to write creative stories. She changed her area of study from English to science after she took a biology course that she liked. Her professors advised her not to study science. They said there was no future for a woman in science.
In 1929, Rachel graduated from college with high honors. She won a financial award to study at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. In 1932, she earned a master's degree in zoology, the scientific study of animals. She taught zoology at the University of Maryland for a few years. During the summers, she studied the ocean and its life forms at the Woods Hole Marine Biological Laboratory in Massachusetts. That is when she became interested in the mysteries of the sea.
Rachel's life changed greatly in the middle 1930s. Her father died suddenly in 1935. He left very little financial support for Rachel's mother. It was during the economic decline in the United States called the Great Depression. Rachel now had to support her mother and herself. She needed more money than her teaching job could provide. She began part-time work for a federal government agency, the Bureau of Fisheries in Washington, D.C. 1 year later, Rachel's sister died. Her sister was the mother of two young girls. Rachel and her mother cared for the girls. Rachel now had to support her mother, two nieces, and herself. Again, she needed a job with better pay.
A full-time job for a biologist opened at the United States Bureau of Fisheries. Rachel Carson was the only woman to try for the position. She had the highest score of all people competing for the job. Miss Carson got the position in August 1936. She was chosen to work in the office of the chief of the biology division. Her first job was to write a series of programs called Romance Under the Waters. The series was broadcast on radio for a year. She continued to write and edit publications for the Bureau of Fisheries for many years. The Bureau was happy to have a scientist who was also an excellent writer. Rachel Carson provided information to the public in interesting and understandable ways.
In 1940, the United States Bureau of Fisheries and the Biological Survey joined to become the Fish and Wildlife Service. Ms. Carson continued as one of the few women employed there as a scientist. The other women worked as office assistants. While she was working for the government, Ms. Carson wrote at night and on weekends. In 1937, she wrote a report about sea life. It was called Undersea. It appeared in the magazine Atlantic Monthly. An editor at a publishing house encouraged her to write a book about the sea for the general public. So she did. Her first book, Under the Sea Wind, was published in 1941.
In 1948, Ms. Carson began working on another book, The Sea Around Us. It became her first best-selling book. Rachel Carson always researched carefully when she wrote. She gathered information from more than 1,000 places to write The Sea Around Us. She also wrote letters to experts all over the world. The Sea Around Us was published in 1951. It was number one on the bestseller list for more than a year. It won the National Book Award. The Sea Around Us made Rachel Carson famous. The money the book earned eased her financial responsibilities for the first time in years. In 1952, Ms. Carson was able to leave her job at the Fish and Wildlife Service and spend her time writing. Ms. Carson moved to a home on the coast of Maine. There she studied the ecology of the sea. Her next book, The Edge of the Sea, was published in 1955. It told of the connection of all living creatures in areas where land and ocean meet.
Rachel Carson's most famous book, Silent Spring, was published in 1962. The idea for the book developed from a suggestion from a friend. Rachel's friend owned a protected area for birds. An airplane had flown over the area where the birds were kept and spread a powerful chemical called DDT. It was part of a project to control mosquitoes. Many songbirds and harmless insects were killed by the DDT. Ms. Carson and other scientists were very concerned about the harmful effects of DDT and other insect-killing chemicals called pesticides. After World War II, these poisonous chemicals were widely used to control insects. Pesticides were sprayed almost everywhere, including agricultural fields and communities. DDT and other pesticides had become popular with the public and the government because they were so effective. Manufacturing these chemicals had become a huge industry.
Rachel Carson tried to get many magazines interested in publishing a report about the subject. However, none would agree to publish anything about such a disputed subject. They said no one wanted to hear that industrial companies could cause great ecological damage. Ms. Carson believed the public needed to know about this important issue. She decided to write a book about it. She collected facts from experts from all over the world. She gathered studies that showed the harmful effects of DDT, including declining bird populations and increased human cancers. In her book, Silent Spring, Ms. Carson questioned the right of industrial companies to pollute without considering the effects on the environment. Ms. Carson argued that this kind of pollution would result in ever-decreasing populations of birds and other wildlife. She said this would lead to the loss of the wonderful sounds of nature. The chemical poisoning of the environment, she said, would cause a silent spring.
The chemical industry felt threatened. Industry spokesmen and other critics said the book was non-scientific and emotional. They misunderstood the message of the book. Ms. Carson did not suggest that all pesticides be banned. She urged that control of these substances be given to biologists who could make informed decisions about the risks involved. Support for the book increased. By the end of 1962, there were more than 40 bills in state legislatures proposing to control pesticides. Finally, in November 1969, the United States government ruled that the use of DDT must stop in 2 years. Rachel Carson did not live to see how her book influenced the government's decision to ban DDT. She died of breast cancer in 1964. She was 56 years old.
Two memorials honor Rachel Carson. One is the Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge in Maine. The other is the Rachel Carson Homestead in Springdale, Pennsylvania, the home she lived in when she was a child. Education programs are offered there that teach children and adults about her environmental values. Rachel Carson's voice is alive in her writings that express the wonder and beauty of the natural world. And her worldwide influence continues through the activities of the environmental protection movement she started.
This special English program was written by LaJuan Davis. It was produced by Paul Thompson. Your announcers were Steve Ember and Rich Kleinfeld. I'm Faith Lapidus. Join us again next week for another People in America program on The Voice of America.